The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are attempting to tame a really monumental figure, Friedrich Nietzsche. We want to understand why he remains one of the most explosive, controversial, and let's be honest, often misrepresented thinkers in modern history.
Absolutely. And we're tackling him through a brilliant, concise guide, Michael Tanner's Nietzsche.
Yeah.
A very short introduction.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you ask people about Nietzsche, you often get reactions like, oh, the nihilist guy, or even links to fascism.
Yeah.
Mainly because his ideas were so horribly twisted after his mental collapse.
Exactly. He really needs rescuing in a way, and Tanner tries to do just that. So our mission today is to follow Tanner's core argument, to see Nietzsche not primarily as a destroyer, but more like a philosophical physician.
The physician who diagnosed what he saw as the most catastrophic spiritual illness threatening the modern West. The collapse of faith, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. The central question Tanner really pushes us towards is the one Nietzsche himself wrestled with. If that foundational Christian worldview, the thing that gave meaning for centuries, if that's collapse, how can human life possibly be justified?
How do we find meaning in a world where, as he famously put it, God is dead?
Yeah, that's the crux of it.
Okay, so to guide us through this, well, this intellectual and spiritual battlefield, we've got Michael Tanner. You mentioned the book, but tell us a bit about Tanner himself. He was a distinguished British philosopher, right?
Mm-hmm.
From Cambridge.
That's right. But what's really fascinating here, and I think quite unique about Tanner's perspective, is that he wasn't just steeped in philosophy. He was also a really significant music critic.
Okay.
Particularly concerning, you know, 19th century German music and culture. And that means he had profound authority on Richard Wagner.
Oh, Wagner. And why does that dual expertise matter so much for getting Nietzsche?
Well, because it lets Tanner show how Nietzsche's philosophy didn't just come out of thin air, out of academic text. It erupted from culture, from personal relationships, from intense struggle. Wagner was Nietzsche's great intellectual hero, his friend.
Until he became his most bitter enemy.
Right, exactly. Tanner, understanding both men so deeply, gets the cultural context, the emotional heart, maybe even the heartbreak that fueled Nietzsche's shift from a classical scholar to this incredibly radical cultural critic.
So Tanner doesn't present Nietzsche's work as some cold, abstract system. It's more like an intense, almost desperate response to a civilization he saw crumbling.
Absolutely. Tanner argues very strongly that Nietzsche should be seen first and foremost as a profound cultural diagnostician. His whole philosophical project is basically a reaction to the death of God and the crisis of values that followed.
Okay.
And here's Tanner's really crucial thesis, the thing that flips the common view. Nietzsche is the greatest opponent of nihilism, that belief that life is ultimately meaningless.
Right, not the champion of it.
Not at all. He saw this void opening up, this nihilistic threat, and he spent his productive life trying to figure out how we could arm ourselves against falling into it.
That really does flip the usual caricature on its head. So those explosive concepts we always hear about, the Übermensch, the will to power, eternal recurrence for Tanner, these aren't just abstract theories then.
No, not primarily.
Yeah.
He presents them more as existential tools, psychological tools even.
Tools designed for what purpose?
Tools designed to force individuals, you and me, to take on the immense responsibility of creating our own values, to define meaning for ourselves, and ultimately to embrace life fully, warts and all.
Mm.
And Tanner's book is great because it cuts through a lot of the difficult jargon. And importantly, it tackles the historical misrepresentations head on, especially that dark period where the Nazis, heavily influenced by his sister Elizabeth, twisted his work.
Yeah, that's crucial context.
Tanner really makes a convincing case for Nietzsche's urgent relevance today, but only if you can read him without those historical distortions.
Okay, so let's dig into the path Tanner lays out. He starts with Nietzsche's early life, right? The paradox of this very pious Lutheran upbringing that somehow leads to the radical atheist who calls himself the Antichrist.
Yeah, that shift is kind of foreshadowed in his very first major work, The Birth of Tragedy. Nietzsche looks at Antichrist and basically says, you've got it wrong. Their greatness wasn't about calm, serene rationality.
No. What was it then?
He argued it came from this incredible synthesis, a balancing act between two opposing cosmic forces.
Okay, I think I know these. The Dionysian and the Apollonia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Dionysian is the chaos, the terror, the intoxication, the fundamental, often frightening reality of existence. The Apollonian is the opposite. It's order, beauty, dreams, the structured world of art.
And Greek tragedy managed to combine these.
Right. For the early Nietzsche, tragedy was the peak cultural achievement because it let people look right into that Dionysian abyss, the terrifying truth of existence, but frame it, make it bearable through the beautiful, ordered form of Apollonian art.
So the deep insight there, as Tanner points out, is that life itself, which is inevitably full of suffering, actually needs an aesthetic justification.
Precisely. Art isn't just decoration, it's what makes life endurable. It's maybe the highest expression of the will to keep living despite everything.
But then things change for Nietzsche. There's that huge break with Wagner you mentioned, and after that, he moves into what's often called his free-spirited phase, works like The Gay Science.
Yeah, and this is where things get really interesting stylistically, too. He largely abandons writing systematic treatises and turns to the aphorism.
Those short, sharp, often paradoxical statements, why the shift?
Panner argues it's a deliberate choice. Nietzsche didn't want passive followers just accepting his ideas. He wanted active readers, intellectual sparring partners almost. The aphorism forces you to think, to question, to piece things together, rather than just swallowing a system whole.
Makes sense. And it's in The Gay Science, in one of those aphoristic sections, that we get perhaps the most famous or infamous statement in all of modern philosophy.
God is dead.
Delivered by a madman in the marketplace.
Yeah. And Tanner is very clear on this. This isn't Nietzsche celebrating. It's not a triumphant declaration. The madman is horrified. He's shouting a warning.
A warning about what?
About the consequences. Killing God meaning dismantling the shared belief system that underpinned Western morality and meaning for centuries means we've shattered our own foundation. We've cast ourselves adrift.
He saw it leading to, what did you call it? A long twilight.
Yeah, he predicts centuries of nihilism, this long twilight, where humanity basically drifts without a compass, without an overarching purpose, because the old one is gone.
Okay, so that's the devastating diagnosis. Where does Nietzsche, according to Tanner, start suggesting a cure, or at least a way forward?
Well, the attempt at a cure, or maybe a new kind of scripture for a godless age, comes in his most famous and perhaps most challenging work, Thus Spoke Zarathustra.
Zarathustra. This is where he gets really poetic, almost prophetic, right?
Very much so. It's a kind of myth-making. Zarathustra is this prophet figure who comes down from the mountains to teach humanity how to live in the wake of God's death. And this is where he introduces the idea of the Übermensch.
The Overman. Okay, let's be careful here. Tanner explains this isn't about, like, racial superiority or some sci-fi evolution, does he?
Absolutely not. Tanner stresses it's an existential goal. The Übermensch is the human being who has overcome humanity's traditional limitations.
Yeah.
Especially the need for external God-given morality or validation.
So it's the individual who creates their own values, accepts responsibility for meaning, and affirms life right here on the earth, as Nietzsche puts it.
Exactly. The Übermensch is Nietzsche's positive answer to the threat of nihilism. It's about achieving your highest potential as a human being, grounded in this world.
And part of the path to becoming or striving towards this Übermensch involves another really famous, really difficult idea.
Ah, yes. The eternal recurrence, or eternal return.
This sounds terrifying. The idea that you might have to live your exact life with all its joys and, crucially, all its pains and mistakes over and over again forever.
It does sound like a nightmare at first glance. But Tanner explains it's not meant as a cosmological theory about the universe actually repeating. It's a thought experiment, the ultimate psychological test.
How so?
It's designed to force you to evaluate your life right now. Could you look at your life in its entirety, every high, every low, every regret, every moment of suffering, and say a wholehearted yes to living it again, exactly the same for all eternity?
Wow. That's a heavy question.
And it is. It's meant to annihilate regret and resentment.
Mm-mm.
If you can affirm your life in that way, if you can will its eternal return, then you've achieved what Nietzsche called amor fati.
Love of one's fate.
Yes. Loving everything that has happened to you, because it was all necessary to make you who you are in this moment. Embracing it all, not just bearing it.
Okay. Then in his later works, the final productive years before his collapse, Tanner shows Nietzsche becoming more systematic in his critique of existing values, especially in On the Genealogy of Morality.
That's right. This is where he really tries to excavate the origins of our moral beliefs. He famously distinguishes between two fundamental types of morality.
Master morality and slave morality.
Exactly. Master morality, for Nietzsche, originates historically with the strong, the noble, the powerful. For them, good simply means noble, strong, life-affirming, excellent. Bad means common, weak, clumsy. to self-affirming morality.
And slave morality.
Slave morality, he argues, is born out of the opposite condition from the perspective of the weak, the oppressed, the suffering. And it's fueled by a specific psychological state he called resentment.
Resentment. That sounds like resentment, but maybe deeper.
Yeah. It's that deep, poisonous, smoldering resentment that the powerless feel towards the powerful. Since they can't actually defeat the masters in reality, they perform a kind of spiritual revenge.
A transvaluation of values, he called it.
Precisely. They cleverly invert the master's values. They declare the master's strengths, pride, power, health to be evil. And they elevate their own characteristics, born of weakness, things like pity, humility, patience, obedience, and call those good.
So it's a fundamental reevaluation of what goodness means, born out of a feeling of impotence and envy.
That's Nietzsche's provocative claim, yes. He saw this slave revolt in morality, primarily carried out, in his view, by Judeo-Christianity, as having dominated Western values for millennia. And he spent his final works trying to dismantle it, to pave the way for new values.
And it's crucial, as Tanner points out, to remember that after Nietzsche collapsed mentally, his sister, Elisabeth Förster Nietzsche, who held anti-Semitic views, heavily edited and manipulated his unpublished notes, packaging them as the will to power.
And made them seem much more aligned with proto-fascist ideas than they likely were in their original context. That distortion haunted his legacy for decades.
Okay, so if we try to pull back and look at the big picture Tanner paints, what are some of the key themes or messages that really stand out from this interpretation of Nietzsche?
Well, connecting it all, I think three themes really emerge strongly from Tanner's reading. First, there's the will to power. Tanner was really insistent. This is not primarily about political domination or wanting to rule over others.
Okay, so what is it then?
It's something more fundamental, more internal. It's this basic, innate drive within all living things to grow, to expand, to overcome obstacles, to discharge strength, to strive for mastery.
So it's the engine behind creativity, behind art, philosophy, even personal growth and achieving excellence.
Exactly. Tanner helps us see it as this fundamental striving that underlies all human activity, all attempts to impose form onto chaos, whether it's building a bridge or writing a symphony.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second key theme?
Second is perspectivism. This is summed up in that challenging phrase, there are no facts, only interpretations. Now, this raises a big question.
Yeah, is he just saying everything is relative, truth doesn't exist?
No. Tanner clarifies, it's not quite lazy relativism. It's more a call for profound intellectual honesty. It means recognizing that all our knowledge, all our beliefs, even our facts, are filtered through our own unique perspective, shaped by our history, our values, our underlying drives that will to power.
So it's about questioning the motives behind our own truths and acknowledging that others might have equally valid, though different, interpretations based on their perspectives.
Precisely. It demands that we become aware of the why behind what we believe. We have to take responsibility for our interpretations rather than pretending they're objective, absolute truths handed down from nowhere.
That's quite demanding. Okay, and the third theme.
And third, something quite bracing. Nietzsche's embrace of suffering as a prerequisite for greatness. He flat out rejected the modern pursuit of mere comfort and happiness as the highest goal.
He thought struggle was necessary.
Absolutely necessary. For Nietzsche, Tanner shows great achievements, deep insights, profound strength of character. These things are almost always born from overcoming significant hardship, from confronting pain and difficulty. He takes that common phrase, what does not kill me makes me stronger, and elevates it into a core philosophical principle.
Don't just endure suffering, but see it as potentially formative, even necessary for becoming who you're meant to be.
Exactly. It's a radical rejection of comfort-seeking culture.
It's definitely powerful stuff. And Tanner really highlights how Nietzsche's style, even when summarized, leaves you with these incredibly memorable, potent ideas.
Yeah, the way he wrote is just as important as what he wrote, in many ways. Maybe we should touch on a few key quotes or ideas that capture his essence as Tanner presents them.
Good idea. Let's start with maybe the most foundational one, the diagnosis of the crisis. God is dead. God remains dead. And we have killed him. Who will wipe this blood off us?
As we discussed, Tanner reads this not as celebration, but as horror. It's Nietzsche staring into the abyss created by the loss of that ultimate foundation for meaning. We did it, but now what? The responsibility, the blood is on us. It's terrifying.
Okay, then moving towards the proposed direction or goal, man is something that shall be overcome. The Übermensch is the meaning of the earth.
Right. Tanner emphasizes this, positions humanity not as the end point of creation, but as a bridge. a transition towards something greater, not biologically, but existentially. The goal is this radical self-overcoming, creating our own meaning, rooted firmly in this life, this earth.
Becoming the poets of our own existence, you could say.
That's a good way to put it. And finally, maybe the ultimate expression of life affirmation, the culmination of overcoming resentment, mor fati.
That one wants nothing to be different, not forward, not backward, not in all eternity, not merely bear what is necessary, but love it.
Yeah. For Tanner, this is the antidote to nihilism, regret, and resentment. To reach a point where you can look back at everything, the good, the bad, the ugly, and affirm it all, love it all, as necessary for creating the person you are now. That's the peak of affirmation.
Wow. Okay, so these are profound, demanding ideas. How does Tanner suggest we might actually apply some of this in our own lives today? What are the practical takeaways?
Well, first, Tanner's Nietzsche issues a very direct personal call to action.
Mm-hmm.
Become a value creator. Especially now, in our world with so many competing values and fewer shared scripts, the practical step is to consciously decide what principles you choose to live by.
So stop just passively inheriting values from culture or family and actually choose or create your own.
Right.
Write your own script.
Exactly. Take responsibility for your own moral compass. Secondly, that thought experiment of eternal recurrence. Tanner suggests using it as a powerful decision-making tool.
How would that work?
When you're facing a really big choice, a career path, a relationship, a major life change, ask yourself, is this action, this path, something I would be willing to live out joyfully for all eternity?
That certainly cuts through the noise, doesn't it? It forces you to think about deep intention and avoids choices you might later regret.
It really does. It demands authenticity. And thirdly, Nietzsche's fierce critique of conformity, what he sometimes called a herd mentality, offers real validation for anyone pursuing a less conventional path.
It gives you permission to be different.
Yeah, it encourages cultivating your unique strengths, embracing your individuality, even if that means being misunderstood or criticized by the majority. It's a call to dare to innovate, personally and professionally, rather than just seeking the safety of the crowd.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what's the main thing that stands out to you from Tanner's interpretation of Nietzsche? What's the big takeaway?
For me, what really resonates is Tanner's powerful framing of Nietzsche as the ultimate physician against nihilism. He doesn't offer easy cures or simple answers, quite the opposite. But his fundamental challenge, the challenge to create meaning in a world that doesn't provide it ready-made, feels incredibly empowering, even today.
It shifts the burden entirely onto the individual, doesn't it? But maybe with that burden comes the possibility of real self-defined greatness.
I think so. And if I connect that to the bigger picture, maybe the lasting insight here is about the profound, maybe even terrifying responsibility that comes with genuine freedom. We might be free from old dogmas and external commandments.
But that means we are now free for the immense task of becoming the architects, the poets of our own lives.
Exactly. That's the demanding creative work that Tanner shows Nietzsche calls us to undertake. And it's why I think his ideas, when rescued from distortion, remain so incredibly vital and challenging.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.